Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. We've been talking a lot on the show about how we integrate health with our healthcare system, which in the United States is, I don't think it's about health anymore. I think it's about disease and how you manage it. At least as I've gotten along in my practice, I've become more aware and starting to think more so out of the box about how I can help my patients with chronic problems. And I've said this before, people are on more medicines, but they're getting sicker. So there has to be some reason why this is going on. And we've now, as allopathic doctors, have learned that there's absolute value that we can glean from our colleagues, and we can now be actual colleagues and collegial with our functional medicine naturopathic doctors. And today we're continuing that bent by having a naturopathic doctor come and speak to us about his practice and what he's learned and how he approaches chronic problems, because that's what it's all about. It's about inflammation, it's about chronic disease, and how do we prevent it and how do we get ourselves back to balance? So today we're going to speak with Dr. John Dempster. He's the owner of the Dempster Clinic, Center for Functional Medicine. His practice is in Canada, and he's a board-certified naturopathic doctor. He focuses on a functional medical medicine model, and he treats his patients who suffer from various medical illnesses, including mental illness, autoimmune disease, and digestive disorders. He's got a strong passion for helping patients embrace an optimal aging philosophy, where he supports them in achieving a longer, healthier, and more fulfilling life. By referring to functional medicine testing, his approach emphasizes the importance of optimizing biochemical, metabolic, and hormonal functions within the body. He's a strong believer in integrative and evidence-based medicine, and he's also completed an advanced fellowship in functional and regenerative and anti-aging medicine. He frequently conducts research on relevant health issues and speaks to corporations about various health and wellness topics. He's also a sought-after speaker, and his work is frequently featured on national television and media sites worldwide. So he's a gentleman who has a wealth of knowledge and someone who can speak with authority to what we're going to talk about today. So Dr. Dempster, I want to thank you so much for joining me. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Great to be on here, Dr. George. Thank you.
Well, I know we gave kind of a synopsis and an overview of the power of integrative medicine and a functional approach. How did you come to it? Because, you know, from an allopathic doctor, we usually have something happen in our families or to ourselves that bring us to it. How did you first figure out that the power was in the cellular biological functional approach?
It's a great question. And you know what? We all have a story of how we end up in these types of careers. And my story started off, you know, in a very normal household. My parents, who I'm the eldest of four children, I used to think, you know, we were a pretty normal family until we started to have to take a shot of cod liver oil before school and have a glass of vegetable juice before dinner. And I thought we were the weirdest family ever. And growing up, though, we started to realize the power of nutrition and the power of looking after ourselves. And, you know, as I matured as an adolescent and went into the pre-med degree in university, I started to become more and more aware of the power and the science behind clinical nutrition. So I didn't know any better. I wanted to be a medical doctor. I didn't know that there was other types of doctors growing up. I was from a very small town. All we had were our family physicians, and there was no talk of naturopathic medicine in our town. But I knew I had this passion. And for me, as I was going through my pre-med degree, getting very close to heading into traditional medical school, I suddenly came across and was referred to naturopathic medicine, and I went and investigated, and of course, the rest is history. It aligned with my passion of helping get to the root cause, helping people exhibit and basically initiate as much of a healing potential as they can while working with their allopathic practitioners. I am a very firm believer of integrative medicine, which means bridging both sides of medicine. That is to help the patient in the best ways possible. And this is really what led me into functional medicine, because functional medicine is, again, an evolving course of medicine that brings together all types of practitioners as you and I were discussing off air, you know, this is where a lot of my colleagues in the medical doctor aspect and naturopathic doctors, this is where we come together and we really start to see the light of helping our patient as an individual, not just treating a label.
I love that. And I hope, and I think it is growing. I just read an article today about burnout among healthcare professionals in the United States. And I would think it's the same thing up north in Canada. But there's so much power in what you do in being able to think about the individual, you know, highlight what makes us different and highlight how we can bring individuals back into balance. For me, when it's about a conveyor belt and it's algorithm driven and AI driven, there has to be a lot of helplessness in that type of system, knowing that or believing, unfortunately, that there's nothing else you can do if it's not a prescription, then and it doesn't work, then we add in another one and it still doesn't work. I mean, I can imagine that would create a lot of frustration on the doctor's side and lead down that path of feeling helpless and wanting to get out of the profession because you're burnt out. I feel the same way when I see a patient that someone else has seen, multiple doctors, and they finally come to my office and there's hope when they leave. Do you have that same relationship with your patients? Because I'm sure they've seen a ton of people before they come to you.
Our average patient's seen 7 doctors before they've seen us.
Wow.
And that's average. Sometimes there's a lot more than that. And, you know, we really just want to focus on each patient as they walk through the door. And I give everything I can to that individual. Now, of course, like every other doctor on this planet, none of us can help everybody. And we have to really manage that because, you know, a lot of us, as whether we're naturopathic physicians or allopathic physicians, we take that to heart. We want to help our patients. And not everybody's going to get well, no matter what type of health approach they take. So, you know, the discussion of burnout is certainly real. And it's something that we, you know, we're really trying to be more aware of as physicians and naturopathic physicians going forward. We want to understand, okay, we need to make sure that we put the oxygen mask on so that we can not only help our patients, but also educate them in helping themselves. And we try to also lead by example in that way.
Well, I noticed that part of your specialty and your scope is also dealing with mental health issues. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is there really a mind and body connection that really needs to be addressed when you're talking about chronic illness, or I should say any illness? And that's for our patients as well as ourselves.
I would say absolutely, Dr. George, and unequivocally. You know, I've had the very fortunate opportunity to not only lecture on a number of different summits and programs, but also be the host and the co-host of a number of summits dedicated towards mental health and mental wellness. And I've had the opportunity to interview some of the brightest minds in this space coming at this from an integrative approach. So again, as we are evolving in our data gathering and in our testing capabilities, we are learning that there's massive connections to all sorts of systems in our bodies and understanding that, you know, if we're dealing with mental illness, we're not just looking at the brain. We must be talking about other organ systems in our body. In fact, one of the massive organ systems, if we're going to talk about mental illness for a moment, is actually our digestive tract, specifically our small intestine. There's so much going on in there. There's something called our enteric nervous system, which encompasses a significant amount of our digestive tract that's directly connected to our central nervous system by something called the vagus nerve. And that information is going back and forth, you know, many times each second, and it's sending all sorts of information about neurotransmitters, about inflammation, and about all sorts of other cofactors that are necessary to optimize our health and our mental wellness. So there's so much going on in our body that we have to take the blinders off sometimes to get the full context of how we can help somebody. And that's what I absolutely love about functional medicine, is that I get to be a health detective. I start to get to throw the net in a number of areas and start to see what I catch. And then we start to focus on, for that individual, the systems that are out of alignment. And if we can start to create balance in each of these systems, we start to create a net improvement overall and give their bodies a chance and give that individual a chance to hit their optimal health and well-being. Of course, there's no cure for everything out there. And, you know, as you alluded to, I work with a lot of chronic illness. I work with an absolutely enormous amount of autoimmune disease in my practice. And sometimes there's all sorts of answers that are very helpful, and sometimes we still have to keep digging. But at least, I love that you alluded to this earlier about, you know, providing your patients with hope. My job, as I meet a patient, as I look them in the eye and I say, look, I don't have every answer, but I'm going to dig for you, and I'm going to give you my word that I dig as far as I can for you. And, you know, and patients appreciate that. And many of them often get very emotional just knowing that they have somebody in their camp.
I absolutely agree. On that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. John Dempster. He is the owner and founder of the Dempster Clinic, Center for Functional Medicine. And you should go to their website, thedempsterclinic.com. They offer telemedicine visits. And I've also seen that you have consultations that people can do with you. Initial consultations as a free online. Is that how it works?
We have what's called a discovery call that for any new prospective patient, we're able to set up a 15-minute Q&A and, you know, just to discuss overall if functional medicine overall is the right fit for them. And that's something that we're more than happy to offer your listeners today as well.
Well, that's really awesome. Thank you. Let's get into the specifics, because there are a lot of people out there who have all these chronic diseases. And if I see another biologic commercial on TV, I'm going to scream. It seems like everything has a biologic associated with it that can, well, basically suppress your immune system, but it doesn't really fix the problem. So I know that there's been an explosion in in fibromyalgia. And I don't remember there being a blood test for it. How did this, well, first of all, is it a thing or is it a constellation of inflammatory symptoms? And how would you go about assessing and treating that person?
Well, you're correct in the sense that there is no one blood test or one biochemical marker that would diagnose fibromyalgia. This is a collection of what I call the perfect storm. And it, usually people who are diagnosed with fibromyalgia, this is something that is a number of different factors leading toward toward the presence of their symptoms. And it's not diagnosable through any particular lab test. This is usually an assessment done by an expert in that area, whether it's a rheumatologist or some other practitioner who's very familiar in this space, and really starting to look at a collection of all their symptoms and putting together that type of diagnosis. So it's one of those umbrella terms that can be labeled for a lot of people that fall under all of the chronic pain and chronic energy issues, and there's lots of other symptoms associated. But it is definitely something that is more common than we realize, because there's so many people walking around that have just not been at their best potential for a very long time.
They're very frustrated, and I feel for them, because it's not only just the pain, it's also their mental status too. I mean, they're depressed, it's hopelessness, it's almost difficult sometimes to reach, because they just feel like they've probably been to a dozen practitioners who just medicated the heck out of them. And just to be able, again, to tease apart and correct. Actually, I have a question about the underpinning. Is the underpinning always about inflammation? And does it always go down to the cellular level? I mean, it's to me the root that you really have to start digging from, because the energy is about cellular production of energy, all that sort of thing. Is that how we should think about it as practitioners?
I think we have to think about it that way. You always have to start at the absolute base foundation and work your way up. And if we can get to as close of a base foundation for our being, you know, without getting into esoterics and energies, we talk about the cell. And if we can start to make sure that we're building out from ourselves outward and getting into organs and getting into systems beyond that, then, you know, we're going to be spinning our tires if we literally try to treat this from a pain management system top down. We have to start bottom up and create an awareness of where those imbalances are from the cellular level out. This is what we do at our clinic in Toronto, is we really start to make sure that we're assessing a number of different factors that can have tremendous impact on us on many levels in our body. We talk about different types of toxicities. We measure these with our patients. These could be environmental toxicities such as heavy metals. They could be things such as molds and all sorts of other different pollutants. You know, there's so many chemicals we're exposed to on a daily level, especially if you're in an urban environment or even in an agricultural environment. And not many of these chemicals have actually been tested in the way that they should be to see how they're impacting human health. And that's definitely an area of discussion. We measure nutrient deficiencies on an intracellular level as much as we can. And this is allowing us not only to look at just what's floating around the bloodstream, but what's actually getting pulled into the cells. And we start talking about things such as the mitochondria. and this is probably a big discussion that you like to have with your patients, Dr. George, but mm-hmm. the mitochondria are so fundamental for healing, especially with an autoimmune disease, whether it's called CFIDS or chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia.
Absolutely.
So these are just some of the things that we start to look at, and there's many others as we go, but we do it in a layered up approach, not a top-down approach. We start on that cellular level and work our way up.
Now, when you talk about environmental toxins, you know, I'm living in the South and mold is a major thing. And, you know, most people think it's got to be this mold infested. You can't, you know, black mold growing on surfaces, but it is more subtle than that, isn't it?
It can be extremely subtle. You can be surrounded by mold and not even see it. And in fact, you know, some of the assessors that we work with that will send into people's homes. There's one individual who's considered one of the top assessors in Canada has told me he's never found a basement that doesn't have mold in it. And that's very alarming to hear. Now, that's not to say that every level of mold is going to impact us on a health level. And I don't want people to think right now that they need to run out of their basements. But he has yet to see a basement that doesn't have some degree of mold in it. And so it's a matter of, okay, how much mold is going to be impacting us in a negative way? And that is obviously just one very specific trigger for mold. We can find it in our foods. Mm-hmm. A lot of my patients will find that they're eating foods that have been contaminated unknowingly. And then, of course, you know, workplace environments and other, it doesn't have to be a cold, damp basement scenario. There could be all sorts of other workplace or residential areas that have been impacted by mold.
You know, it reminds me of a patient that I had who I hadn't seen for a while, who came in with this neurological presentation. I thought she had Parkinson's disease. She could barely talk. She was measured in her walk. And I thought, what happened? And it turned out she had mold on the floorboards under her bed, toxic mold. And she had to be detoxed. And she's actually now working back at her old job. But we really had to think outside the box to do it. So you would think it's just an allergy response, right? Congestion, maybe sinus infections. But no one really thinks about neurological and even mental and emotional, right?
Definitely, because the molds themselves aren't the main problem. It's the mycotoxins that come from the molds that can really create a neuroendocrinological effect on the body. And that can have all sorts of downstream impact on mental health. As you said, it can impact, I've seen it virtually be involved in almost any system in our body. If we're talking joint pain, if we're talking skin conditions, digestive issues, mental health, you know, the list goes on. You can start to draw a connection to a lot of these toxicities that we're exposed with over and over. You know, one of the analogies I like to discuss with my patients is that, look, it's not about being in a perfect environment. It's not about living in a toxic-free environment over and over again. It's very tough to even conceive of doing that. You will drive yourself crazy. Mm-hmm. But we absolutely do want to start to take assessment and take stock of what we can do to reduce that burden. And the analogy that I use is almost like a rain barrel. You don't want your rain barrel to overflow. It overflows, it creates a big messy puddle of water all over your lawn or your driveway. What we do want, though, is you want a rain barrel that manages the level that is in there. And, you know, some days it'll be higher than others, and then other days it'll be much lower. And as long as you've got a buffer in there to handle an onslaught, then this is what we try to strive with our patients. And so our bodies are capable of handling certain degree of toxicity over time. But we all know those patients that even if they walk past somebody who's got strong perfume on or, you know, might be smoking or something like that, even that one little breath of that is enough to set them off. So there are some people where their rain barrels are constantly overflowing. And it's up to us as practitioners to start to figure out what can we do to improve their ability to live in an environment that, you know, makes it a very good quality and realistic life for them.
I think you made a really good point. And it's the difference between the detective work to figure out the pathways that need to be cleared or detoxed, reset the cellular side of this versus suppressing with a medication or somehow just controlling the symptom. You just never get, no wonder these are chronic diseases for some folks who end up in that pathway of treatment because they never get to the root cause, the cellular health, the energy production, the ability of the cells to recover and reboot. That doesn't seem to be one of the things that drive an average patient's treatment. How do we, you're seeing patients who've already made the jump to, there's something better, I want something better, and they're coming to see you. But I know you speak to corporations and you do wellness. Is there now an increased awareness and a want for corporations and other places that you speak to learn about this? Like, they know that there's something else out there and they're actually looking.
I would say that most definitely. You know, I can just say that by the number of conversations I've had with teams reaching out to me. But, you know, we're all becoming more aware, and we're all wanting to try to do the right thing as much as we can. And the more people are aware, the more that they're going to start to realize that, look, we actually have to start to take stock of what's going on in our diet, what's going on in our lifestyle, what's going on with our stress management, what's going on with our nutrient levels, what's going on with our gut microbiome, and, you know, and so on and so forth. These are all conversations that, you know, we're very fortunate to be in the information generation, that all we have to do is just flip open a laptop or a computer or your iPhone, and you can start to do some research and become quite up to speed on a number of possible angles to consider right away. But of course, Dr. Google isn't going to necessarily guide you to what's the most important to you, and isn't going to necessarily guide you to something that's been vetted properly. And so we do continue to make sure that we're putting the right filters on when we're looking at all these options. But it's nice to see that there's not only awareness and recognition by corporations, but we're seeing just this consciousness shift that people are starting to take stock and become accountable for their own health.
Well, I love the fact that you respect your patients and think of them as partners that are adults who can do their research. And I noticed that on your website, you actually have a part of your practice where it's a give and take between patients and a reach out from you, so that it's a daily conversation that they're having about their health. I really love that.
Absolutely. You know, most of my patients know their bodies better than any doctor they've ever been to. Mm-hmm. They may not be able to understand the physiology and the biochemistry and the anatomy as well, but they still know what works and what doesn't work for them. And we sometimes need to remember, part of the art of medicine is listening to our patients. And that's so important. And so we really aim to link arms with every one of our patients as they come through the door and form a partnership, as you said.
That's the essence, or I should say, the art of medicine. And I think it's an lost art, but I think it's coming back. And your practice and, you know, doctors who, like myself, are becoming more aware, that is the future of healthcare worldwide. It's not going to be central. It's going to be the individual doctor and the individual patient, and that conversation, that collegiality, that partnership that gets us out of this disease rut that we're in. So let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Sidera's medical cost community is a refreshing approach for managing large and small unexpected healthcare costs. This surprisingly affordable non-insurance solution is centered on people helping people. If you're looking for an intentionally not status quo approach to managing healthcare costs, Sidera is exactly what you're looking for. Visit Sidera.com/controlyourhealth for more information, or call 1-855-998-8075. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Dempster. And before the break, we were talking about a specific immune issue, or I should say chronic disease, such as chronic fatigue and autoimmunity in general. Let's talk a bit about the autoimmune issue. It seems to me there's a lot of patients coming through with autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. I'm seeing an explosion of younger and younger people coming in with a history of some sort of autoimmune disease. Do you find it? Is there any underlying connection between this outgrowth of autoimmune problems?
I think there are, that we are starting to identify some commonalities. And again, you know, as I alluded to earlier, the autoimmune conditions that are often present, there's over 200 different diagnosable conditions that fall under the autoimmune category, possibly even more. But we're seeing some common threads there. And as I mentioned earlier, this is almost like a perfect storm of a number of factors that have happened over time. Again, not all overnight, but over time, there've been some situations that have led to the situation that each person finds themselves in, whether it's Crohn's disease or whether it's rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis. You know, we could discuss any number of autoimmune conditions. And to me, the approach is still very, very similar with everybody. I have to assess them, as we talked about, from the ground up. We have to make sure that we're starting to get their foundation set. We got to look at what's going on in their cells. We have to understand how their gut is dealing with things. And you may be wondering, well, what does the gut have to do with my knee pain? Mm-hmm. Well, your gut is such a critical gateway to the bloodstream and a gateway to our body absorbing things from our food. But we also have to discuss what's going on in our gut. And our gut has this thing called the microbiome, or the gut microbiome, because we have a number of different microbiomes in our body. But the gut microbiome is the largest microbiome in the body, and it's arguably the most important. And it is so for these reasons. This is a collection of bacteria and yeast and possibly even molds and parasites, but they all need to be working in harmony. And unfortunately, our given situation in, you know, industrialized nations and where we are today in the world, a lot of that balance has been challenged on a daily level. And sometimes there is a tipping point where there's a problem, whether that's, you know, consuming foods over time that have been fed antibiotics, or foods that have been laced with pesticides, herbicides, preservatives, compounds. There's lots of things about food that can slowly start to impact your gut and change the microflora or the balance between these organisms. There's obviously things that are happening in our environment. We are seeing through very significant levels of research right now that what goes on with the stress in our life, how that can actually change our bacterial balances within 24 hours in our gut. And then, of course, you know, if anybody's ever been exposed to any medications that are tough on the gut, we can see all sorts of different factors start to stack up. And then we haven't even touched on the genetic predispositions that some people have. So, again, this is not to run and hide and say, oh, there's so much going on that I can't win here. No, our patients get hope, and they really, so many of them just start to feel better, often within, you know, just a number of weeks when we start to take this type of assessment and approach. So it's really important to tackle the gut, and this is why we have such a focus of that in my practice, and why I actually created something called the Healthy Gut Institute, is to help people get their gut as healthy as possible so that we are pulling in what we're supposed to pull into the bloodstream and not letting other things into the bloodstream that shouldn't be in there that are going to completely overwhelm our detox pathways and our inflammatory balance pathways and all sorts of other systems in our body. If we don't patch that up and make sure that integrity of that lining, and that what we call our intestinal permeability, if that ever starts to become an issue, we're seeing all sorts of issues downstream from that. And from an autoimmune perspective, the gut is a very important place to start.
Almost 70% of the immune system about is in the gut, right? So if it's inflamed or not absorbing or allowing overgrowth of things that are harmful to kick in, I can see, for me, from an ENT standpoint, people having nasal congestion and sinus issues based on what they eat, histamine release. It's like this cascade. You really just have to make sure all those dominoes are in the right place instead of inhibiting. Like, let's say you have irritable bowel, people are taking things to stop them from going to the bathroom or slow the GI tract. It seems to be so counterintuitive versus figuring out, hey, is it the right microenvironment, the right microbiome? Is it emotional, right? As even emotion can affect your stress, and emotion can affect the flora that you said. So does that set people up for these episodes? They just have an acronym for everything, right? So one day it's constipation, one day it's diarrhea, next thing you know, you're on something to immunosuppress the whole thing. It just seems nobody's thinking about the root cause. And am I wrong in thinking that IBS really should be looked at from the microbiome out, from the cellular level out?
Yeah, and I think IBS is one of many conditions in the gut that we should be looking from the gut level and cellular level out. And, you know, you've mentioned stress. Like, there's such a massive number of different possible angles to take when somebody comes to me and they've got a chronic digestive issue. Let's say they've been labeled with IBS. Well, you know, sometimes the last thing they need is to be on Imodium, because if their body is dealing with a subtle infection that hasn't been detected in traditional blood work or traditional workup, or their scopes are coming back clean, but they are dealing with a very subtle, whether it's a parasitic infection or bacterial infection, the last thing we want to do is keep that infection rampant inside of us by just plugging up the doors when your body's natural reflex is to actually start to get things moving out. And so there is definitely a time and a place for medication, 100%. But I find with IBS especially, that should be the last thing we look at until we start to understand, okay, how are they responding to foods? There are many different levels of food sensitivities that are not being tested by the average workup that I see. There are four different main antibodies that should be looked at, IgG, IgA, IgM, and IgE. And if we aren't talking about how your immune system responds to what you eat, then we're missing a big part of that conversation. We have to discuss what's going on with the microbiome. And there are lovely tools and advanced tools that can start to give us some information on the delicate balance that's happening in there and starting to understand, do we have enough of the beneficial bacteria? We're often talking about the bad stuff, but sometimes we need to make sure that we're also looking at the good stuff. And you've got to make sure that we're identifying where those balances, are they right where they're supposed to be? There's something called SIBO, which stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And as it suggests, it is, has to do with an overgrowth of bacteria in your small intestine. And this is something that can be measured right now that can be very, very problematic for people who are experiencing IBS, whether it's constipation or whether it's diarrhea or you get a mix of both. There's different gases that can be released by SIBO bacteria, methane dominant or hydrogen dominant. And those are the two main ones. And we want to make sure that we're understanding if there's any of this going on. And there's other conversations that we start to have, but these are the types of conversations that we have with our patients. We don't just want to give them, just because I'm a naturopathic doctor, I'm not just going to treat their symptoms by giving them a natural laxative or giving them a natural antidiarrheal. I'm asking the question, why is this happening? And what can we do to help get to that root cause?
I think at the beginning of the show, you mentioned the bridging between allopathic and holistic functional medicine, and you just described the power of it. You know, I'm thinking about those folks. I wonder how many of those guys have been on omeprazole and Nexium and all these other stomach acid blocking medications when the problem is overgrowth sometimes of the bacteria in the small intestine. I mean, it's amazing how it's just a complete disconnect between cause and effect. Does that, I mean, again, you have such a unique perspective because you're able to see patients who've been on this path and now have decided there's got to be a better way. I just think you must go home in the afternoon and just feel like you've made a difference in somebody's quality of life because you've helped identify the problem. I love that detective. That's exactly what it is. It's about being a detective and having the time to take to actually interview your patient and get their history. I mean, average doctor visit is about 7 minutes. That's we've learned nationally in the States. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's your average intake for a first patient, for example?
My initial intake is between 60 and 70 minutes. And that is after I've spent about an hour on their preparing their case by looking at a questionnaire that's 35 pages long. So we get a lot of information about our patients even before they set their foot in the door. And so when we sit and we meet, we're diving right into it. I've already assessed and done what I call an audit on their system so that I can really start to narrow down where we're going to be going in that first appointment and what tests are going to be the most relevant to our patient in that first appointment. And so this is why we don't create one-size-fits-all programs in my practice. We have a literally an a la carte we are going to treat each individual and assess them as an individual. It doesn't matter to me if I've got five colitis patients that are sitting in front of me, they could all walk out with five very different treatment plans. And so we take the time to try and do that.
That's music to my ears. I think that's healthcare. That's patient-centered healthcare, not just the platitude, but the actual sit down, spend the time, get to know the patient and have the patient be, as I said, a partner in their care. They have personal responsibility, it sounds like. So if they can understand what the problem is, then they have responsibility to put in place the program that you have set out for them. I assume that your compliance rate must be extremely good.
Well, I would like to think so as well. You know, it's still human nature to not be so open to change. And sometimes when you ask somebody to give up something they've been eating their whole life or to change a lifestyle habit they've been doing their whole life, it still takes effort and we still have ups and downs with that. And I explain to each patient as they come through the door, listen, I don't expect perfection from anybody, but I expect progress. And as long as we are making, you know, progress moving forward and taking effort and taking stock of where we are each week, each day, each hour, that's how we're going to get somewhere. Because if we think about trying to achieve perfection and doing everything all at once and, you know, absolutely being perfect with our diet, sometimes that alone is worse than the treatment, and you can create so much stress and angst and just frustration when they're adhering to that. You really have to set the tone. Look, yes, we do have to make change here. And yes, that change is often hard. But listen, we're going to be realistic and we're going to find out how this is going to work well for you.
I love it. On that note, let's take our final break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. John Dempster, naturopathic doctor, board certified, with his clinic, the Dempster Clinic, Center for Functional Medicine in Toronto, Canada. And, you know, before the break, we talked about a few of the most common chronic diseases that seem to come through people's offices. But I want to segue into a problem that I think a lot of doctors are seeing, and that is metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes. Is that something that's come, that you've seen an outgrowth of in your practice?
Yes, we've seen a massive amount of that over the 14 years I've been in practice, but I've seen a lot of it changing the last 5 years, especially. And, you know, there's lots of factors that we could probably point the finger at, but it's collectively in industrialized nations, we're seeing this only go up right now.
Is there a way that, especially if not type one, where you're insulin dependent, can diet really be an adjunct, really an underpinning of reversal of those two problems?
Well, when it comes to type 2 diabetes, absolutely. And it's such a critical component to helping somebody overcome their type 2 diabetes. Again, there's a massive difference between type 1 and type 2, or insulin-dependent, non-insulin-dependent type 2 as well. But we do see, for the most part, for non-insulin-dependent type 2 diabetics, there's so much that they can do. And in fact, we've seen massive changes, and this is not, I am standing on, you know, the shoulders of the giants beneath me that have taught me, but within 30 days, we can often see somebody that we can label non-diabetic. If they change their diet, change their lifestyle, start to address some of the core detox pathways that are usually not working that well, start to address some of the microbiome issues, but we're starting to see within 30 days some massive changes if they can stick with these dietary shifts. So it's usually the dietary and a lot of our patients at first are sedentary, mm-hmm. and we have to teach them the importance of exercise. So as we can continue to see that improve, their sensitivity improves to the blood sugar and the insulin. So we want to make sure that we're paying attention to all these factors, but it's amazing how your body can respond when you give it a chance to do that.
I think it's self-healing if you get out of the way most of the time. And I can foresee a connection with the gut as well and the immune system, right? If your blood sugar levels are elevated, does that have any effect on the immune response?
Oh, definitely. You know, we're seeing all sorts of literature that if we have an uncontrolled blood sugar level in our body, we are dealing with all sorts of different side effects of that and downstream impacts that are going to create more inflammation in our body. And that in turn is also going to command more energy and more effort on our reserves to handle and to deal with. And therefore, it takes away from our ability to repair, you know, whether it's a damaged detox pathway or damaged microbiome. We can see all sorts of direct and indirect connections to the immune system being weakened.
And from the standpoint of mind and body on that as well, if you're stressed and you're not sleeping properly and your cortisol levels are kind of elevated because it's being triggered, is that a hindrance to getting control over your blood sugar level and losing weight?
Extremely. If your cortisol levels are not balanced, cortisol's one of its main jobs is to almost secrete sugar into your bloodstream, your stored reserves into your bloodstream. It's your fight or flight hormone. It's allowing you to mount an attack to whatever the perceived stress is. So in ways to do that, it will mobilize sugars into your tissues to allow you to run faster and mobilize it into your brain, allow you to think faster. But at the same time, it's going to reduce and suppress other systems in your body. And if we see chronic stimulation of cortisol without the proper recovery period, we are not only suppressing our immune system over and over again and our inflammatory pathways, but we're also creating more and more fat deposition around the abdomen. Cortisol is something that will actually exacerbate weight gain over time or increase issues with fatty organs such as fatty liver and so forth if we are not paying attention to the consistency that it's being firing. And cortisol, of course, comes from our adrenal glands. And these tiny little glands are so important to help us manage stressors day to day. Now, I have a lot of patients that come to me with metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes that claim to have no stress in their life. Well, they may not have the typical stressors, or they may just may not be aware of them, but they also may be forming a stress response to their diet. They may be forming a stress response to the mold in their basement, to the heavy metals in their body, to the phthalates and all the different xenoestrogens that are in their environment. There's all sorts of ways your body secretes cortisol and responds in a stressful manner that doesn't have to do with your boss yelling at you or having a fight with your loved one, right? Those are some of the typical stresses we just think of. We're like, no, I'm not stressed. I don't have any of that. But we forget that there's all sorts of other mechanisms to trigger a stress response in our body. If you have chronic pain, that's another one. Chronic pain can also constantly contribute to a stress response in your body. So this is why we have to take that look above the forest and understand what's going on and look down and say, okay, now I get a bigger picture here. Mm-hmm. And really start to focus on the whole story and the whole person. And again, that's where the power of functional medicine lies.
Well, it's thinking of things differently. And specifically, I'm talking about IV therapies now. Most people take these multivitamins and they're poorly absorbed. And from what you described about our gut, if it's under stress and it's not going to allow things to get into the system to actually feed us, then there's another method, another way to go around it until the system starts to right itself. And you offer IV vitamin therapy, correct? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We do. Yeah, so IV vitamin therapy is intravenous vitamin therapy, and as it sounds. And what we do is we will start to understand, as you know, you've been listening to today, different deficiencies in individuals, different areas and different systems that need extra support. And if we ever find that there's certain levels of gut permeability or malabsorption or different signs of other systems that are really way down and where they need to be, vitamin infusions can actually bypass some of the malabsorption and go directly into the bloodstream to help offer a much more therapeutic dose of a compound or a nutrient, or in most cases, a whole formula of nutrients that we customize for each patient. And we see this very effective for helping people manage and I said this word inflammation a lot today, and it's so important to understand that chronic systemic inflammation is the root of a lot of chronic disease, including autoimmune disease. And so if we can manage some of the inflammatory pathways better, which we're starting to see a lot of benefit from IV therapy and some of the other modalities that we can draw upon, then this is part of how we get somebody to succeed. If we can help initiate the phase one and phase two detox pathways in their liver, make that work more effectively by bringing in certain nutrients such as glutathione or all the different amino acids and minerals, vitamin C, so forth. You know, a lot of our IV bags have anywhere between 28 to 33 nutrients in them. That's customized to that individual. And suddenly it's almost like a breath of fresh air. Those cells recognize the nutrients they've been deficient in for so long, and they start to do their job. One of those nutrients, and there's many, each one nutrient that we discuss with our patients has anywhere between 200 to 300 responsibilities every second in every cell in your body. And it's really important to start to understand the impact. If we have not only just one or two deficiencies, but if we have 10 or more, there's a compounded impact there that can have on a number of systems in our body. So we want to make sure that we're really focusing on getting the nutrients into the proper areas in the body and getting into the cells so that we can do what they're supposed to do.
I love that. And, you know, people do a lot of talking about detox, but is there a safe way to detox? And you can feed the cells, but you still have to eliminate things that need to get out of the system, whether that's heavy metals or detoxing from mold toxicity and that sort of thing. What do you recommend? And I mean, obviously, I would want to do it under a medical professional's guidance, but there are people doing things or saying things that are totally not true. Is there something that people need to totally avoid because it's not safe?
Well, I think it's important to always understand, what are we trying to do with the detox? Are we just doing a detox? Is it something we saw on a YouTube channel or on an Instagram feed? Does it sound cool? No, like we have to understand, okay, is our body capable of dealing and handling with the detox that we're discussing? So we really make sure that we customize a detox to each patient. And we do that by measuring and using data to help us get there. Are we going to help somebody if they've got a ton of different gallstones going on and we just suddenly start to put them on some sort of cleanse that's going to mobilize gallstones, but somehow lodge one in the common bile duct? That's not going to help somebody very well. That's a trip to the emergency room. So, you know, there's a lot of things out there that are focused on just generalized cleanses, but it is important to make sure that you're doing gentle things daily to help your body facilitate a better detox system. But if you're going through some of these, what I call extreme detoxes, I'm not a huge fan of the one-size-fits-all aspect of that because, A, it's a good idea to know what you're trying to clean or else you're just going to be wasting your time, energy, and money. Two, you want to make sure that it's super safe and making sure that it's something that is going to help you. Now, there is a conversation to be had that a lot of people feel crummy when they start a detox, and that's not always a dangerous thing, but we have to understand that there's a difference between a healing crisis and something that could be potentially causing a problem. So I'm not a huge fan of the one-size-fits-all detoxes, as you can probably tell from our conversation, but it is such an important conversation to make sure that we are helping our patients detoxify. And oftentimes it is a good idea once you've, you know, there's many things you can do on your own, such as tidying up your diet and taking stock of chemicals and compounds that are in your lifestyle and removing those. That's going to initiate the process. But then, you know, grabbing the hold of somebody who's trained in integrative medicine or functional medicine and just starting to work with them, that's really going to give you the best results in the best time frame possible.
I absolutely agree. In the minute that we have left, how can people reach your clinic?
Well, they can find us online. We're at thedempsterclinic.com. We have lots of downloadable free resources that people can start to dive into right away. They can also check out our Healthy Gut Institute, which is our do-it-yourself program that is filled with hours of videos of me discussing various aspects of things that you can start to do in a systematic order to improve the integrity and the functionality of your gut, which is, to me, the gateway to all health and wellness. And you can find a link on that on our webpage as well.
You also have a blog too that you have on that website, correct?
We do.
I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I learned a lot and now I feel even more empowered to, I'm going down the right path for my patients, and your clinic is an awesome resource. And as you said at the beginning, you don't have to be in Canada. You can call, you can do this from a telemedicine standpoint, even if you don't live in Canada, correct?
Well, you can. Now, there's different jurisdictions depending on where each doctor practices. In our jurisdiction, you have to be within the province of Ontario or in Canada, at the very least. But it really depends on the current college that regulates each state and each province.
Got you. Once again, thank you for all you do. I'd love to have you come back anytime.
Thanks, Dr. George. It's been a real treat.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.